and more Asian Americans are finding their voice and voting.
Including in Tuesday's consequential election in the U.S. state of Georgia. This is Wednesday, the 6th of January, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, we explore the importance of that Georgia election. The New York Stock Exchange changes its stance on delisting three Chinese telecom giants. And the price of Japanese tuna is drastically lower than it was a year ago. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. As voters went to the polls Tuesday in the southern U.S. state of Georgia, there's a realization that the state's Asian American population is playing a bigger role in who will be the winner. Stephanie Cho is the executive director of the Atlanta, Georgia Office of Asian Americans Advancing Justice. I spoke with her Monday. Tell me if you can, what role the Asian American community plays as far as this election is concerned.
I think the Asian American community plays a huge role in the election, as it did in 2020 during the general. So in the general, there was 186,000 AAPIs that cast their vote, and it was 15% only on election day, and 85% of them voted early or by absentee mail-in ballots. And it's looking the same way also for the early numbers that we saw for voting in the runoff as well. More people are voting early, Asian Americans, more people are voting absentee mail-in ballot.
How big of a force is the Asian American community in this election?
Our population has really grown. We're approximately we're 495,000 AAPIs that live in Georgia, and more than 300,000 have registered to vote. And so our numbers have just really grown. We're the fastest growing population in Georgia, and we're seeing that is happening in the polls as well, as more and more Asian Americans are finding their voice and voting.
Now, the question pops up as to who are they voting for? As you know, there was a few articles. There was something mentioned in the New York Times yesterday. There was something in The Guardian saying that the overall thought that Asian Americans voted Democratic isn't really the case anymore. Is that correct?
So it was never the case. Asian Americans don't vote by party. They vote by issue. So there's folks that vote more conservatively, maybe, around issues of economics and maybe differently around issues of education and healthcare. So it really depends on the individual. Also, Asian Americans, as you know, are not a monolith. So we have many different ethnicities across the what's considered Asian American. And so depending on the relationship that the home country that you are from has with the United States also plays a huge part in how you end up voting. So it's not just strictly on party lines for Asian Americans across the board.
But is there a, not demographic, but country? The word around is that Vietnamese most probably are the most active as far as voting conservatively. Is there anything to that?
I'm not sure if it's necessarily an ethnic breakdown, but it's also, I think, an age breakdown, too. So what I'm seeing is different ages are voting differently, depending on, and then sometimes it's ethnicity base as well. But the population in Georgia, for example, is the Vietnamese population is lower than in maybe other heavier AAPI states. So like California or New York or something. So the highest population of Asian Americans in Georgia is Indian. Then it's Chinese, mostly Mandarin speakers. Then it's Korean. And then you have actually a fairly big drop to get to Vietnamese in terms of population size. So like your top three numbers are really Indian, Chinese, mostly Mandarin speakers, and Korean.
What is the thought about politicians courting the Asian American vote? Is there, has it been done enough? Has it been done more? What's the situation?
I think that candidates should should be looking at Asian Americans more, especially in southern states. And I think that that started to happen this year. But I think previous to that, I think there wasn't enough attention on the Asian American communities in southern states because people thought the Asian American population were only mattered in states like California or like New York or Chicago or Illinois, like bigger states. But I think they're now seeing sort of the power of the Asian American vote, and that even though the numbers are not maybe as big, it's a fast growing population. It's also a population where a lot of folks are registered. It's a high registration population too. And that didn't happen overnight. That happened through a lot of different work that our organization has been a part of for the last 10 years to really get out and get folks involved in civic participation throughout the last 10 years. So it's just, you know, starting to really come to its own. And it's come to a point where more and more people are seeing the power and that actually their vote really matters here.
Stephanie Cho is the Executive Director for Asian Americans Advancing Justice in Atlanta. Up next, we explore the importance of the Georgia election for the incoming U.S. president. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The top U.S. general in South Korea says North Korea does not appear to be preparing a major provocation at the onset of the administration of President-elect Joe Biden. The former head of a state-owned Chinese asset management company is sentenced to death for bribe-taking, one of the harshest punishments for economic crimes in recent years. South Korea to negotiate with Iran over a seized tanker. India bars virus vaccine maker from exporting doses. And the planned Chinese dam along a South Asian river triggers concerns in India and Bangladesh. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Voters in the southern U.S. state of Georgia are playing a crucial role in determining the balance of power in the U.S. for the next 2 years as they head to the polls. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from Atlanta, Georgia, on the two U.S. Senate runoff elections. To the
hills of Tennessee. President Trump on the campaign trail Monday, once again alleging election fraud.
There's no way we lost Georgia. There's no way. That was a rigged election.
Even while telling voters here they need to head to the polls once again to re-elect Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue to give Republicans control of the U.S. Senate.
I'm not going to admit I cast my ballot with some skepticism because of what happened the first time.
The president's supporters say beating Democratic challengers John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock is so important it overcomes their doubts about election fraud.
They're going to have the power in the House, the Senate. That's the most extreme power that we can have against the taxpaying person. I guess our taxes will probably go up. They're going to try to take our guns away. But it could get ugly. I mean, I'm afraid if it goes the way that the Democrats want you to believe that it could get turned ugly.
President-elect Biden won Georgia by fewer than 12,000 votes, due in large part to voters in the suburbs of Atlanta shifting from Republicans to Democrats.
By electing John and the Reverend, you'll be sending a powerful message to Congress and to the country.
Can I give you a swag bag? Thank you. And would you like it?
Those close margins in this traditionally Republican state mean Democrats have to mount yet another strong effort to mobilize voters.
Just go ahead and run through the guide and I'll run you through a training.
Volunteers like Kara Allen and Sean Watkins are a big part of the Democrats' strategy for reaching out to the younger, more diverse voters who have reshaped the state in recent years.
I actually wasn't that much into politics like maybe 2 years ago, but because of everything going on with Trump in the country, it's really made me come out and like do things like this. And I really hope that people come out and change things for the better.
Allen says Trump's doubts about his loss in Georgia don't account for the state's demographic changes in recent years.
It's just typical Trump behavior, in my opinion. Like, of course, he's not going to take the answer so easily. And, like, I feel like since Georgia has always been known as a Republican state, you know, a change happens and all of a sudden, oh, there's fraud. Like, I mean, change is always possible regardless of, like, what is going on. I think it's really genuine that it happened.
A record 3 million Georgians have already headed to the polls in early voting. If Democrats win both Senate seats Tuesday, then Vice President-elect Kamala Harris would be the tie-breaking vote. But after a close presidential election here in Georgia, many of the president's supporters say they won't accept those results.
There's fraudulent and won in the presidential election. I wouldn't put him past him for some shady stuff to happen.
That raises the prospect of the results being contested well beyond Election Day Tuesday. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Atlanta, Georgia.
Happening now in Asia, the fight to contain the coronavirus in northern China's Hebei has entered wartime mode, official media reported Tuesday, after the province surrounding the capital, Beijing, saw its first locally transmitted COVID-19 cases in more than 6 months. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happier with us on VOA Asia. Media reports say U.S. President Donald Trump recently received unconfirmed intelligence information indicating that China offered money to non-state actors in Afghanistan to attack American soldiers. Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad is covering the story and spoke with VOA's Steve Miller.
Well, what we understand from the intelligence that has been shared with President Donald Trump is that Chinese have offered bounties on U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan, and that was quite a revelation because it has come out at a time when tensions have heightened between China and the United States. And now with this revelation or alleged revelation, obviously things will become more problematic for the two big powers. We know that we have been told that so far, this intelligence has not been confirmed, and U.S. officials are still working to corroborate whatever intelligence they have gathered so far.
As you mentioned, the intelligence has not been confirmed, and they're still working to sort things out. But overall, what's been the reaction, not only from the U.S., but from Afghan officials?
Well, this is interesting because we tried our best to reach out to officials in Kabul to get some reaction, but they have been really dead silent. They have not said anything. They have basically said that they are waiting for U.S. officials to come out on the record and share some details. Only then they would be able to comment on this. So we have not received or seen any reaction from officials in Afghanistan.
Ayaz, this sounds very familiar to allegations that the U.S. intelligence community made against Russia, saying that they were paying bounties on U.S. troops.
It's more or less the same thing, you know, what U.S. officials have said about Russia paying bounties to militants in Afghanistan, and now Chinese doing the same thing. The difference between the two is that at that time, about the allegations against Russia, we knew for sure from U.S. officials that the militants that were allegedly being paid bounties on U.S. soldiers were part of the Taliban insurgency, the same insurgency that the United States was discussing with a peace agreement at that time. That's when this scandal emerged, that Taliban and U.S. officials were negotiating, which obviously ended on a very sort of a landmark agreement between the two adversaries. But here, in case of the Chinese bounties that were allegedly being paid to non-state actors, you know, that's what U.S. officials reportedly have referred to non-state actors. They have not clearly said whether these non-state actors are linked to the Taliban or they are part of other groups operating in Afghanistan. But we know that Chinese are worried. They have repeatedly conveyed to Afghan officials that this East Turkestan Islamic movement which China has declared as a terrorist group and has been carrying out attacks in China's western Xinjiang region. And allegedly, according to Chinese officials, these militants have bases in Afghanistan. So we know for sure that these are the militants that China wants to root out. But which non-state actors the U.S. intelligence has found to be in contact with Chinese, we still have no idea.
Ayaz Gul in Islamabad, talking with VOA Steve Miller.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A court in Vietnam Tuesday sentenced three freelance journalists known for their criticism of government to between 11 and 15 years in prison after finding them guilty of spreading anti-state propaganda. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The New York Stock Exchange said it no longer intends to delist three Chinese telecom giants that have been targeted by U.S. President Donald Trump's outgoing administration, a shock reversal of an announcement made only last week. Libby Hogan reports.
The New York Stock Exchange said on Monday it has scrapped its plan to delist three Chinese telecom giants, China Mobile, China Telecom, and China Unicom. In a statement, the exchange said it made the decision, quote, in light of further consultation with relevant regulatory authorities. It is a U-turn from last week, when the NYSE said it would delist the three. In November, the U.S. government moved to block American investors from 31 firms it says are owned or controlled by the Chinese military. China Unicom and China Telecom said in statements that they had taken note of the development and would release information in accordance with regulations, adding that investors should pay attention to investment risks. China Mobile was not immediately available for comment. China's foreign ministry had called the planned delisting unwise and that it reflected how, quote, random, arbitrary and uncertain U.S. rules can be. On Tuesday, after news broke of the reversal, shares of all three companies surged in Hong Kong trade.
That was Libby Hogan reporting.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam defended the government's decision to ban people, including its own citizens, from flying to Hong Kong from Britain. It announced the ban before Christmas after a highly transmissible variant of the coronavirus was discovered in England.
We do have a lot of returnees from the United Kingdom, accounting for about one-third of arrivals at the Hong Kong International Airport. If we did nothing, you imagine, it would be putting our city at a great risk. So we have to take this measure, which was very difficult because it involves Hong Kong residents, and many of them are students or parents who have gone to visit their students and they need to come back.
The ban on UK arrivals includes those who have been in the UK for more than 2 hours over the past 14 days. We continue on VOA Asia. Tokyo's biggest fish market held its New Year auction Tuesday, but the priciest tuna went for just 10% of last year's top catch. The pandemic has slashed tuna prices, with diners staying at home. Lucy Fielder has more.
Tokyo's largest fish market, Toyosu, rings in the new year with its first tuna auction of 2021. But the coronavirus pandemic has slashed tuna prices, because people aren't eating out. According to staff, the priciest bluefin tuna sold at 20.8 million yen on Tuesday, or just over $200,000. That's just 10% of the biggest seller of 2020, a bluefin that went for nearly $1.9 million. It's not the first sign the pandemic has hit the tuna market. Japan's tuna imports fell 18% in the first 6 months of 2020 from a year earlier, the finance ministry reported. One major bidder, Kiyomura Corp., which owns a number of popular restaurant chains, said it decided to refrain from bidding high this year. That's because top bids for prized tuna tend to create a media buzz and could encourage diners to flock to their restaurants despite the COVID risks.
That was correspondent Lucy Fielder with the story. We continue on VOA Asia. Creative minds in the state of Georgia are using 3D printing technology to replicate ancient treasures and create new ones. More from VOA's Julie Tabo.
About 2,500 years ago in ancient Greece, renowned sculptor Phidias created a giant statue of Zeus, king of the Greek gods. It was housed in a massive temple built in his honor in Olympia, the birthplace of the Olympic Games. The statue was destroyed by fire in the 5th century AD, but there have been replicas made in the years since. At Kennesaw State University in Georgia, a scale model of the statue was made using 3D printing technology. Randy Emmert is an assistant professor of mechanical engineering technology at the university. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
I see it as a fun, cool way to work with the tools of engineering and opening up dialogue between engineering students and art students to discover new ways to either create art or how to work with the tools and bring those together.
The model was made out of plastic and took about 6 weeks to create. The sculpture was created for the Millennium Gate Museum in Atlanta, Georgia, for an exhibit commemorating the 20th anniversary of its 1996 Olympic Games. It remains the centerpiece of the museum today. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Andrew Savoia, a 24-year-old Arlington, Virginia cello player, has taken social media by storm, posting TikTok videos of himself performing instrumental covers of modern pop and hip-hop songs. Maxi Maskalkov has the story.
It was a stream of unhappy events that led Savoia to his social media success. A painful breakup, failing to get into medical school, depression. In a strange way, all this contributed to his achievements.
Music for me has been a way for me to, like I said, process emotion, experiences, memories that I've had. But it has an ability to heal because it can do the same thing for other people, and it's very unifying.
His process is simple. Find a song he likes and play it on the cello.
I listen to lots of different kinds of music. I listen to hip-hop. I listen to rock music, country music sometimes. Lots of classical music, and countless other genres. And I just try to do songs that have a melody line that would work well on this instrument. This instrument has such a diversity in its sound.
But music will not be Savoia's career. He graduated from Virginia Tech with a degree in neurobiology and plans to become a neurologist in the future. But his two passions, music and medicine, are inseparable. Something one of his former teachers sees as well.
I could definitely see a specific, you know, sector of the population who has a specific ear, or depending on the type of illness that you have, that you can actually be soothed by music. And if you watch him when he plays, and of course, I only started watching him recently, he's very, very passionate how he actually started playing the cello. I think that process sort of healed him.
Savoia's cover version of the song Come Get Her by a hip-hop duo Ray Sremmurd got over 3 million views. He hopes people who like his stuff will pick up an instrument themselves. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
Thank you for joining us. Our thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Keith Lane, Doug Bernard, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.